You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Hello everyone, good to have you back. You join us on William Hill's US Sports Podcast, and very good to have you with us as we look ahead to the divisional round of playoff games in the NFL, and also, of course, it's the National College Championship game as well. So we'll have a little bit of a look at Clemson versus LSU a bit later on in the podcast, plus, of course, the four divisional round games. Sam Norris here, and joining me in the studio once again is Stephen Back, fresh from another weekend taking on the William Hill punters. How are you, Stephen?
Very well. It's only seven games to go now in the NFL season. The end is nigh, but it's getting oh so juicy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're well into the business end. What was the wildcard weekend like for the books? Because presumably two home favourites getting beaten, the Patriots and the Saints, albeit I didn't meet anyone who fancied the Patriots.
I think it was a mixed bag. I think pretty much we went split either night on the Saturday and the Sunday.
Right.
Obviously, the Titans getting it done was a good result for us because everybody wants the Patriots from behind.
Yeah.
Like the Patriots. Texans was the other way around. Everyone, as a result, when the favourite comes back to
big,
win, it's never...
Big come behind win, yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure it was mirrored the same on Sunday with the Vikings. I wasn't in on Sunday, but from looking at all our reports, it was exactly the same. The Saints not managing to get it done in overtime was a great result for us. Unlucky for the punters, of which we'll get onto that with our picks as well. And
yeah,
then exactly the same with the Seahawks as a fate. Well, not the favourites, but because I'm pretty sure they went off. That line flip-flopped a number of times.
When I took it,
it was the Seahawks were dogs, and then they went favs again, then they went dogs. So, but they ended up getting it done quite comfortably after the cursed Carson Wentz went down injured, which he's got to be one of the most unlucky quarterbacks in history, really, to think that was his first career start and he only had three throws and then that was it. He was done for the night.
Yeah, playoff football and Carson Wentz have just not been able to to mirror up yet, have they, through the course of his career. Mention our picks, actually. You had a better wildcard weekend than I did. Obviously, we both went for the Titans, which is a nice return money line wise, but a lot of people seem to fancy the Titans. I felt aggrieved having gone for the Bills to have come away losing that. Prior to the wildcard weekend matchup against the Texans, under Bill O'Brien, the Texans had gone 0-22 when down 16 points. So what a time to book that trend in the playoffs, of course. But that was particularly galling for me and anyone who backed the Bills.
The most amazing moment for all of us when we were watching it was the touchdown that got scratched off to start the second half. Mm-hmm. We were all watching it, obviously, on the broadcast. And even the sideline reporter, I think it was Michelle Tafoya, just had to turn around and didn't know what had happened because...
Yep.
They'd given the touchdown when he'd thrown the ball to the referee, which I think by the letter of the law, yes, it should have been a touchdown, but in the spirit of the game, it was the worst decision possible. And I think the referees, much like the referees at the Saints game, were probably going to get lynched once they left the stadium.
It was very interesting that they applied common sense because he hadn't called for a fair catch. I think everybody agreed that he hadn't given the fair catch signal. Tossed the ball to the ref. The ref gets out of the way because the ball is still live. Bills take it in for a touchdown, which, as you say, by the letter of the law, should have stood, but they applied
common sense yeah.
Said that the runner had given himself up, which I always think is...
Well, he'd thrown the towel and sort of given him... made no attempt to make
ever
forward progress.
Yeah.
And then just threw it towards the referee who just backed out the way.
Yeah.
Which was, on the replay, was the amazing thing. So if that had happened, then we may not have... Well, we obviously... I don't think we would have seen the Texans come back and I managed to get the backdoor cover on our picks to go 3-1 last week. But
it makes me wonder if football could apply that to the VAR shambles that's currently taking
common
place.
Sense.
A little bit of common sense
It's between that and then the debate in cricket that's raging on of the no ball rule.
Yeah.
Common sense is a dangerous thing, and if people used it, I don't know where we'd be.
Yes. So we split that game. You went for Texans, you were correct. We both fancy the Saints, you probably more so than me, but in truth, both of us, I'd still thought the Saints would have won that. That was probably the surprise week of the entire weekend. And then we both went for the Seahawks in what was probably a bit of a damp squib, having had three great games. The Seahawks-Eagles game was just a bit...
Given all the injuries to both sides, I think that was always going to be it's a shame that was the one that finished the weekend as well.
I
think that would have been a much better
starter than
a finisher, but... We got what we got, and unfortunately, when you've got Carson Wentz going down early doors and you've got the 40-year-old Josh McCown making his debut in the playoffs, He put up a valiant effort, but it was never going to be enough for the Eagles, sadly.
He wasn't afraid to go in and get hurt either, was he? He was living every play.
Well, if this is his only chance, he might as well just give it your all.
Let's dive into the divisional round of games then, starting with the first game coming up on Saturday. This is a 9:35, 9:40-ish start time. Before we get fully stuck into the betting, so a couple of people have pointed out the anomaly of these games, and maybe you'll be able to shed some light on this. You probably watch more American sport than I do. Why is the game in San Francisco played early and the game in Baltimore played late? Because this game is going to be very early in San Francisco, what, early afternoon? And the game in Baltimore is going to be pretty late.
I think it'll be a 1 o'clock start
in San Fran.
San Francisco will be 7 hours back.
Will the Baltimore game not be... Because that's 1:15 here, so that will be late in Baltimore. Whereas, it would have made more sense if these the other way around.
Like we said, common sense is a dangerous thing. It does not make sense. However, it will be interesting to have an early West Coast game in the playoffs to see how both teams... See how the Niners really react,
because
this won't be common for them, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, they won't be particularly pleased with this early slot, the Niners, but they are at home. They've got home field advantage, obviously secured the bye as the number one seed in the NFC, and they welcome the Vikings, who got past the Saints in wildcard weekend. 13-5 for the Vikings, 5-16 for the Niners. The spread here is a touchdown, +7 for the Vikings, 10-11, -7 for the Niners, 10-11. 44 points is our point spread, 10-11 over and under. We'll start with the visiting Vikings then, who pulled off the biggest upset of wildcard weekend. They were the biggest underdogs, and they got the job done against the New Orleans Saints in overtime, who were general second favourites for the Super Bowl. A lot of people fancy them to come out of the NFC. And a real defining moment for Kirk Cousins, whose record in primetime games was abysmal, and he had a nice night. He didn't go superstar levels, but he isn't that kind of quarterback. It was a very efficient night for Kirk Cousins. Got to throw Dalvin Cook into the mix. Adam Thielen as well, who's missed a lot of this season, and obviously gave up the fumble for his first catch of the game, but got some really important first downs after that. It was one in the eye, I suppose, for all those people who'd criticised Kirk Cousins a lot throughout the course of the season. You and me are probably included in that.
I can't walk away from that. I think at the beginning of the year, we slated him more than anyone, probably, or as much as anyone. And then I think that was his first career playoff win, one. I think the record I said in the podcast last week, he was 5-13 in primetime games or night games during the regular season and the playoffs, which is abysmal. And to think he managed to... They pulled off the biggest upset of the weekend. They were the biggest underdogs and they managed to win it. He went to his weapons when he needed them. Because Thielen finished with 129 yards. The massive 43-yard catch in overtime to take him to the 2-yard line. Obviously, the game ended more controversy because the Saints were playing with, obviously, the touchdown for Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, the offensive pass interference, no call.
Yeah, could have been gone either way. It's one of those, if it gets called, it's not getting overturned. If it doesn't get called, it's rarely going to get overturned, but all props to the Vikings for managing to get it done. The thing is, looking at this game, it is two teams that are run heavy offenses to me. So you've got two teams that are going to run the ball and control the clock. So the only thing that screams out to me for this is an unders game, of which last week in wildcard week, and the unders went 4-0 for anyone who had betting. Four quite low scoring games because we had some run heavy games in and amongst them, and then just some teams that are offensively challenged. So we could see a similar thread this weekend. Obviously, you've got the other stat that I found interesting was that I saw online that even though it's... If we were looking at the quarterbacks, who would you take, Jimmy G or Kirk Cousins?
Jimmy G, I think.
Jimmy G. The interesting fact that I found was that Jimmy G is the least... He goes down the field of all the quarterbacks in the NFL the least.
Well, San Fran are a huge run-heavy team.
They are a huge run...
They run the ball more than anyone in the league?
No, I think obviously Baltimore run the ball more than anyone in the league. But only 6% of his throws are of 20 yards or further downfield, which I thought was amazing to think of it when everyone's been booing him up as the next quarterback. But the amazing thing is he throws it downfield the least, but he's the most accurate in doing so. So when he needs to go and make a big play, not nine times out of 10, two times out of three, he'll actually make the big play. So it's 66% completion rate when he throws it more than 20 yards downfield, which is the best in the NFL out of all qualified quarterbacks. But he does it the least at only 6% of his throws going downfield. So they're a chunk team that they'll just chip away at you, on the ground and then some underthrows from Jimmy G. But looking at this one, I did say the record when the Niners are the number one seed last week, that they get to the NFC Championship game as the number one seed four times. They've lost three times. So looking at history, they should get there this week. Mm. And I think it's now a 7-point spread. Other than the unders, I think I would take the Niners, because I don't think the Vikings will be able to pull off the miracle 2 weeks in a row.
That was kind of my thinking as well. I'm not in love with the Niners, I have to say, and I would have taken the Saints had the yeah. Saints made this game. But that said, I'm not sure Lightning is going to strike twice with the Vikings, and I think the Niners will probably have enough. So I'd be in agreement.
The only interesting thing of looking at the records is that the last five times these two teams have played, the Vikings have won four of them.
Right, okay.
Which, all those games are within the last 10 years, so it's not as if it's like going back to like a historic stat. It's fairly recent going forward, but the other thing was that basically whoever wins this game, I think whoever's going to be able to control the clock the best and run the ball the best. That was one of the keys for the Vikings. Obviously, they got the ball to start the overtime, but they had 37 minutes of the possession to 27 minutes for the Saints. So if you're able to control the clock and control the game better, then that's a much better element for the Vikings to have in their back pocket. But obviously against another great running team in the Niners, it will be hard to do. And they've also got to contend with George Kittle, the tight end position, who no one seems to be able to stop. And he's been able to take the throne off of Gronk as the best tight end in the league.
Indeed. Do you think he's better than Kelce?
Right now, I think the confidence he's exuding is unmatched, to the point where he's just running through guys.
The late game on Saturday, then going into early Sunday morning, is the Tennessee Titans at the Baltimore Ravens. The Titans are 7-2. The Ravens are 10-43. +9.5 Tennessee, 10-11. -9.5 Baltimore, 10-11. 47 points is the point spread. Over and under is 10-11 each of two. We spoke about the earlier game on the slate, the Vikings and the Niners possibly being a bit of a run fest. Well, in Derrick Henry for the Titans here, and in Lamar Jackson for the Ravens, we've got two people who, every time they run the ball, it's exciting. You want to watch these guys running the ball. Different runners, admittedly. Lamar Jackson's probably got more agility, he's probably more elusive, and Derrick Henry's just an all-out wrecking ball, just cannot be stopped at the moment. So even though these are, you know, two teams that can pass the ball, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of running plays called here as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even in the game from last week, Tannehill only had 71 passing yards. Yeah. I think they only threw it, I think it was 14 times in the game. They went to
Why
Henry.
Would you throw it when you can just exactly. feed Derrick Henry?
Well, he had 34 carries as on his own, and the team rushed it 40 times in the game. 201 rushing yards, 182 of them to Derrick Henry.
Goodness.
Which is amazing. But we were all saying is they're just overworking him, but we looked back at his stats, and I'd look from when he was his final year at Alabama before he came to the NFL. And Nick Saban, in back-to-back games, gave him 40-plus carries. He had 46 against Auburn and 44 against Florida. So he's been worked before.
And going back even further, his high school record we looked is at them as well. Phenomenal.
Yeah, I think
He must have just been so much bigger than everybody else.
I was going to say, he looks like a man among boys in the NFL. Imagine what it was against the kids, probably.
It was a great picture of Romelu Lukaku trending on Twitter a few years ago in his under 13's team, and he just dwarfs them, just men against boys. And I could imagine Derrick Henry was the same in high school.
Well, it's amazing because he's almost a throwback running back, really, because when you don't see guys at that size and that strength anymore. You see them quick, agile, mobile, whereas he is just brute force, run it down your throat. And trying to stop him, teams are struggling to do so. And that's why he won the rushing title and why they knocked out the Patriots, because the only thing is, when they say when you're rushing the ball, it's not going to guarantee your points. All you're going to do is control the game. But if you can't convert it at the end, you're going to struggle to win games. And that's the difference, I think. The only difference I've got between the Titans and the Ravens, for me, is whilst Tannehill's been explosive, the Ravens have got that dual threat in Lamar Jackson. If he needs to throw it, he will throw it. But the elusiveness at the quarterback position for him, it's going to be a struggle for the Titans, I think, containing him. Mm. And also, the other stat I've seen is this is only the fourth time in a playoff game where you had 3,000-yard rushers in the same game. Because obviously Lamar and Mark Ingram did it for the Ravens and Derrick Henry. But looking at the betting for this one, because of the heavy run element, I think, in the game, the unders, again, is another bet for me. I actually think the Titans could cover this one.
Okay.
9.5-point spread. If both teams are going to run the ball, it'll be a low-scoring game, I imagine. as a result, I think trying to cover 10 points might be a challenge. So I think, for me, the Titans spread is a pick.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Ravens are my choice for the Super Bowl. I'm going to go for them to cover, but I do 100% see your point here. I just think he's too much of an X factor, Lamar Jackson, to properly factor in. They've got a great defense as well. They just look the complete package. John, we were saying the other week, it's not too often we talk about who's got the best kicker, but they've got the best kicker in the league as well, just as a little cherry on top.
That is one of the main issues of contention for the Titans. I think the other stat I heard is, going back the last three games, the Titans have only scored touchdowns.
Right, okay.
So, obviously, last game against the Patriots, I think... Oh, no, they did score a kick. That was the first time they scored a kick in four games, it was.
Really?
Because they had the worst kicking team in the league. They had the lowest percentage. I think it was only like 58% success rate on their kicks, down to getting blocked so many times. They struggled with a kicker. So if it comes down to a close game as well, you'd much rather have Justin Tucker in your back pocket, who is the best kicker of all time, statistically, in terms of successful kicks. So that's another ace up their sleeve for the Ravens.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one, though, particularly watching Derrick Henry go at it again. One final point on him as well, and you touched on it earlier, the fact that he is a throwback running back in the way that he's built. Running backs that are built like him in today's NFL are your third and goal, fourth and goal kind of guys. They're there to punch it in. But this guy gets chunk plays as well. Like he obviously had the 99-yard touchdown, was it last season?
97-yard touchdown against the Texans.
He went virtually the whole length of the field. People his size don't normally get the huge chunk plays. They're deployed to blast it in at the end zone.
He even had a catch in the backfield play from last week as well, 22-yard reception, which you don't see very often.
You don't think of him having that in his locker, really.
No, but he's a versatile running back, but it is just trying to stop him. If they run it three times, you imagine he's going to get 10 yards, so they're just going to keep progressing down the field.
Yeah. The Texans at the Chiefs then is the first game coming up on Sunday. Just after 8 o'clock, this one gets underway. The Texans are 18-5. The Chiefs are 5-22. The spread here, -10 for the Chiefs, even money, +10 for the Texans, 5-6. 51 points is the point spread here, 10-11 over and under. So right at the top of the podcast, it was a heroic comeback from the Texans in wildcard weekend. The first time under Bill O'Brien, they came back from a 16-point hole. Got it done in overtime eventually. And looking forward to this matchup against the Chiefs, obviously, because in Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, we've got two of the best young quarterbacks in the league going at it.
They do. It's a case of... But the only worry for me is that was an aberration, I think, for the Texans managed. Obviously, we said the stats of them being down by 13 or more points. I don't think you can be able to... Doing that against a Bills team who aren't going to score a lot of points, it's not as bad. Whereas this high-powered Chiefs offense, if it gets down to a shootout, I think there can only be one winner between Watson and Mahomes, and I think we both know who it's going to be.
Yeah, this feels like, I mean, it's priced accordingly with the spread because it's much higher, but this feels like the most likely game to turn into a real barn burner in terms of points being put on the board.
It does, but, well, you say that, but I still think I'm still continuing my trend. I think the unders still a better because the worry for me is last week is the most points the Texans have put up in a playoff game in a long time.
Right, okay.
To think, in all of Watson's previous career playoff games, they'd only scored 7 points.
Yeah, with the defeat to Indy last year.
With the defeat in Indy, and even up to halftime. So he played six quarters of football, and only scored 7 points, and they managed to put up enough to get past the Bills. I don't think they're going to be able to score enough to get past the Chiefs on this occasion, of which I don't think they'll be able to get more than two touchdowns, because the worry for me, even against the Bills, is how many times they were able to get to Watson. He was sacked 7 times against the Bills. I know they're a better defense than the Chiefs, but if the Chiefs use their plan of just blitzing constantly, which they did against the Broncos, I think it was on Monday Night Football, when Mahomes went down, and they're able to just get to the quarterback and cause him issues. Obviously, Watson was able to elude that ridiculous sack in overtime to create basically the game-winning play. Obviously, he's a bit more elusive, but if they're able to send enough pressure and get to him, because the offensive line for the Texans has not been good enough.
No.
I think that will spell a lot of problems for the Texans.
And as elusive and as incredibly athletic as it was from Deshaun Watson, most of the time in those scenarios, when two defenders converge on you, you're not going to get out of it. Regardless of how talented you are as a quarterback, the majority of the time, if there are two defenders allowed in, one of them is going to drop you. should have happened last week. It didn't, but he's not going to be able to get out of that all the time.
No, and then to be able to get out of it, make the throw, and your receiver are able to juke the defender to get another 20 yards after the catch is not going to happen very often. But this is also a rematch of I failed to mention all of these games this weekend have happened before in the playoffs at least once.
Right, okay.
This is the most recent of which the two teams faced in the 2015 wildcard game. So it's not like it's not happened before. Obviously, this is a new iteration of both teams.
Yep.
But for me, I think in order for the Texans to win this game, they have to do a repeat of what they did in the regular season. Obviously, these sides played in the regular season. The Texans won. They won 31-24, of which they rushed the ball 41 times. And basically, the recipe for them was to control the clock. In that game, they had the time of possession was 40-20 in favour of the Texans. And that's the only way I think you're going to be able to beat the Chiefs. But let's be honest, they've not got the best run game. Out of all, they're probably next to the Seahawks now, probably got the worst run game in out of all the playoff teams remaining, which I don't think is going to be successful for them going forward in the playoffs. But seeing a 10-point spread is a lot.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm kind of coming around to similar views that you had with the Tennessee-Baltimore game. Is the points differential so big that you have to be with the underdog on the spread?
Yeah, well, when I even wrote the notes up for this, it was a 9.5-point spread, which even, I know 9.5 is only half a point different, but if you're backing the Chiefs minus 10 to get them to win by two touchdowns is a big ask. But I think I'm going to go out on a limb on this one. I think the Chiefs can cover it because the worry for me is that the Texans won't be able to get enough points. But I do think for me, the highest one out of all the games this weekend, 51, I think the under's still a bet in this because I don't think the Texans will be able to get enough points on the board to overthrow the point spread and be able to cover the spread. So I think it'd be Chiefs, even money minus 10 and under 51 for me.
Okay. Chiefs for me as well. And I'll probably roll in on the spread, but I'm quite fancy over, I think. I don't like this Chiefs D particularly. And I think this might be a nice, not a bounce back game for the Houston O-line because it's been terrible, but I don't think the Chiefs D are as good as the Bills D. So I think the O-line might get a bit more of a respite this week. And Deshaun Watson doesn't need loads more time in the pocket. He just needs some kind of help from the
O-line. I think the difference is the Chiefs D, the secondary is weak.
Yeah.
But the actual defensive line, pressuring the quarterback is much better, I think, than the secondary as a result. If they can apply that pressure, it'll be enough.
Yeah.
Even though Watson is a mobile quarterback, we've seen with his flimsy O-line that you can get to him. And I think that'll be the key in the game.
The final game then of the divisional round is the Seattle Seahawks in Green Bay. They take on the Packers. This one getting underway just before midnight on Sunday in the UK. 7-4 for the Seahawks, 1-2 for the Packers. The spread here, +4 for the Seahawks, -4 for the Packers. And it's a 47-point spread over and under 10-11 each of two. This is going to be my last moan about scheduling. But again, why is this the late game? It's going to be freezing at Lambeau.
The funny thing was,
it's always cold at Lambeau.
It's always cold in Lambeau. But I was listening to a podcast and they were going to say the same about the Ravens game. It's going to be freezing. And then someone looked at the weather and it's actually been quite mild.
Oh, okay.
So you might get away with it, or this might be a tundra game where it's just snow everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. If, be honest with you, they're both cold weather teams. Seattle, it's not exactly like you're playing in South Beach. So I don't think it's going to be affecting either team, but I think it's reflecting the line with it being so short for either side. We've both said this. We don't see the Packers as a two seed and a bye team.
We've been borderline rude about the Packers all season. Given they're a 13-win team, we have shown them no respect this season.
No, they finished...
I'm not showing them respect here. I'm going for the Seahawks again.
Oh, you're going for the...
I've gone for three favourites before this. So I need,
I know.
There has to be
one upset. Yeah, but the thing was, none of us really expected the Seahawks and Packers to play in this round, did we?
Yeah.
We all thought it was going to be a Saints... Yeah. A Saints-Packers game, of which we would have easily taken the Saints regardless.
Yeah.
So this has completely thrown us for what our predictions were going to be. I know we both, talking on the podcast before we started recording, we both thought the Saints were going to come out of the NFC.
Yep.
So looking at this one, again, the only thing for me is looking at the Seahawks, I did mention earlier that their run game is so depleted, having lost Carson and lost Rashad Penny.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're able to use Marshawn Lynch to punch it in at the end, but they were having to rely essentially on a lot of Russell Wilson heroics last week. And that's going to be the recipe going forward. This is the other interesting thing I saw was that this is the only game which features any Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, and it's got the fewest since 2010, the divisional round. Yeah. Only having two, of which back in 2010, divisional round, you only had Brady and Big Ben that had won Super Bowls previously. Looking at the career records, they both have got winning playoff records. Rodgers is 9-7 in his career. Wilson's 9-5. But it is, for me, it's going to be one of those situations. You're going to be having a close game, and it's going to be a game-winning drive. Who are you going to back in this one for me? Mm-hmm. And is your money against Wilson or is your money against Rodgers? Right now, I trust, if you're down with the ball, I think Wilson is that guy who's going to come up with the magic. Obviously, DK Metcalf was huge for the Seahawks last week. Had 160 receiving yards and the touchdown, which I think was definitely a Seahawks record in terms of for a rookie receiver in his playoff debut. But neither of us are, other than you, I think you're a lot more confident taking the Seahawks. This is a game for me I'm really on the fence as to who to pick.
I think either one of these teams will probably succumb to the Niners in the
I think we're both looking
round.
At,
yeah.
The only thing, well, we've seen the Seahawks lose to the Niners already this season in San Francisco, so it's not out of the realms of possibility. The Packers, they're such a Jekyll and Hyde team. Even when I looked at all the records, I think they were 10-6 against the spread on the season, and I still can't believe they were 10-6 against the spread because the amount of games that I saw that they just seemed to limp home against teams. They finished on a 5-game winning streak, which I still couldn't believe when I saw it. They just haven't been convincing for me at all year. And as a result, with it being a 4-point spread, I think you've got that possibility of winning by field goal in overtime, which I know isn't a great thing to say. But as a result, I think that +4 for the Seahawks is very tempting to me. Mm. But I can't go full in on the Seahawks money line because I've no idea. I just think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah.
So I think the +4, I think, is the bet for me.
Fair. I'll be with the Seahawks in this one. You mentioned, obviously, the depleted running game there. No Chris Carson, no Rashad Penny. They've turned to an old friend in Marshawn Lynch, but he's obviously not the force of old. But having said all that, I can't remember his first name now, but the rookie Homer, I thought, had quite a nice game last week. And he played well in Week 17 as well. The Green Bay defense has not been sparkling against the rush this year. They went through they straightened it out a little bit toward the end of the season, but they went through a horrible patch mid-year. And I thought that the rookie played all right last week. I've been taking the Packers on all season, really, and I'm not going to stop now. And as I say, I want an underdog, at least one on my side this week, because we've got three short favourites who I think are going to go in. I go with the Seahawks here.
It's interesting. I've looked at just looking at the records for the playoffs, so Seattle, this is looking at their playoff records. They're 8-1 against the spread when they've been a road dog. But against the Packers, they have really struggled in the betting.
Right, okay.
So in the last five meetings at all against the Packers, they're 0-4-1. So four losses and a push against the spread. And then in Green Bay in their last six, they're 0-5-1. So they've yet to cover in against the Packers in the last six playoff game, just in Green Bay in general. So that's not great going forward. And the Packers are 4-0 in their last game in January against the spread. Mm. So everything in terms of the betting history would point you towards the Packers. But it's like we both said, this is probably the least convincing Packers team in the playoffs that we've seen for a long time, I'd say. So as a result, I'm willing to take on the betting history and go on the Seahawks.
And yet they're a 2-seed and a 13-win team. So figure.
Well, the Saints were a 13-win team. They're sat at home right now.
That's
so,
true.
Although the only thing we'll say is we've slated them enough. I'll throw in a few more jabs that they were handed a few wins by the referees this season. The Lions, your game is the one that comes most prominently to mind. So
Trey Flowers call for the
twice
phantom face mask. Man who never had a face illegal mask
hands,
penalty.
In yeah, illegal hands to the face twice. Yeah. And yeah, so you take away that win. Saints are in this game already, so it's amazing what happens with one flag. But we'll see if the referees play a hand for the Packers again in this game. But I think we'd rather see the Seahawks against the Niners, I think, in the NFC Championship game.
Yes, I think so. Just before we talk college ball, just a quick word on some of the other news, which is not really betting focused at the moment, but Tua's obviously declared for the draft. Next year, which is going to have some repercussions in potential trades going forward, particularly for my Lions, who are after Chase Young, but have got the Redskins ahead of us in the queue, but somebody might want to trade up to secure Tua, and that could then allow Chase Young to fall to the Lions, which is what I'm hoping is going to happen. We kind of know already. Joe Burrow's to Bengals seems to be set in stone. But after that, the fact that Tua comes in now, so we've got the Bengals who go first, they'll take Joe Burrow. The Redskins are probably not in the quarterback market. They drafted Haskins last year. The Lions, you imagine, are going to stick with Matt Stafford. The Giants drafted Daniel Jones last year, so I don't think they'll be in the mix. And then you come to the Dolphins, who we know are desperate for Tua.
We know they're desperate for Tua, but the problem for now is it's the injury flags. Mm. If you've got a knackered hip, it's not a good thing.
And it's a real bad injury as well.
It's not a good injury, and he to think he was almost nailed on for the one pick, number one pick at the start of the year, that could see him drop all the way to the low, into the top 10.
Do you think he'll fall that far?
I think he could fall that far because
I don't think the Dolphins will pass up on him if he's still there at five, unless someone trades up for the two pick off Washington.
Potentially, but the only other thing for the Dolphins is if they've got this process in place whereby looking long-term towards the future, they could go for another year of Fitzmagic and think, right, Trevor Lawrence is on the board, who we'll get on to next year.
Yeah.
It should be a few good quarterbacks coming out the year after. Maybe we hold on for one more year, accumulate more assets, because they've got more than enough number one picks this year. Obviously, they traded Minka Fitzpatrick to the Steelers, got a first pick off them. They got some assets back from the Texans when they traded Tunsil and Kenny Stills.
Yeah.
So they've got more than enough assets accumulated whereby they don't necessarily have to go all in for the quarterback this year if they can acquire one, of which we've also seen the rumours of Tom Brady
potentially
leaving,
which
the Dolphins are in the conversation to steal him. I did see something on Instagram before I came here, a post alluding to the fact that he wants to try and stay loyal to the Patriots, but we'll see how that goes. I know from everything I've listened to and read that Robert Kraft does not want Tom Brady to play in another uniform.
Yeah, sure.
So I think he will throw the kitchen sink at him. Yeah. Whether there's a bit of back and forth between Belichick and Kraft on that, we'll wait and see. But it should be interesting going forward. Obviously, at the minute, we haven't got much draft specials to bet on. However, once the Super Bowl finishes, our boys in Your Odds and the US team will get a load of draft markets out. It's just wait until the end of the shake-up to see what happens in the playoffs, I imagine.
What are the chances of my Lions getting Chase Young at three?
I'll get back to you on that one once I've tried with the
crunch the numbers. I think maybe Washington at two, but we'll see. Two declaring can only be a positive for Lions fans.
The only other worry for what the Redskins is, I still think they'd be in the market for a quarterback because Haskins, in the games he played this year, did not look massively.
But do you have to give a bit more time to a guy you only drafted last year and has played a handful of games?
Teams don't always. You saw what happened to Josh Rosen. He's literally, to think he's been behind Fitzpatrick all year at Miami. He was only drafted 2 years ago. Arizona moved quickly to get Kyler Murray. So you don't necessarily get the longest reign. Obviously, the one we've seen get the longest is Jameis Winston, of which what Tampa Bay does with him is going to be fascinating this summer because I think we both agree he's the most polarising quarterback in the league because you don't know what you're going to get from him from drive to drive, which is fantastic to watch as a fan. But Bruce Arians, I think if he has another year of him, might have a heart attack on the sidelines because he doesn't look like he makes mill, of which to finish the season on the 30-30 pick six to get your 30th interception was just storybook.
Well,
this is
the thing, you know he's going to get touchdowns, you know he's going to get picks, it's just a case of
when?
hoping that they come at the right time and hoping that the touchdowns outweigh the picks. One college game, of course, to talk about then, it's the big national final taking place Monday night, Clemson Tigers at the LSU Tigers. 37-20 for Clemson and 20-43 for LSU. Plus 5.5 for Clemson is 10-11, and minus 5.5 for LSU is 10-11. 69.5 is the point spread here. 10-11 over and under. Obviously, LSU led by Joe Burrows, who is pretty much the nailed-on number one draft pick next year. Trevor Lawrence for Clemson is perhaps going to be the number one draft pick in a year's time. Possible Heisman winner would be favourite, I imagine, for that award at this moment in time. Does it go to LSU because of the superior experience of Joe Burrows?
Not necessarily. I think Clemson won the title last year with Trevor Lawrence leading them. They didn't have the greatest regular season. They weren't the most convincing as a result. That's why they snuck in as I think it was the two seed they finished as. So for all those who aren't up to date or they don't know much about the college football,
me being one of them.
Well, when I started this job, I was exactly the same. The way it works is you've got the bowl games, and in order to determine a national champion in college, you have a playoff, which they started 4 years ago, which the top four teams will play in basically a semi-final and a final, of which you're ranked on your regular season performance. LSU finished as the number one seed. They battered Oklahoma in the semi-final when Joe Burrow threw seven touchdowns in the first half.
Blimey.
So they absolutely blitzed Oklahoma. And then Clemson just snuck out Chase Young and the Ohio State Buckeyes in the semifinal. I think it was 24-21 off the top of my head. I'm probably wrong on that, but I know it was a close game. Going to this one, it's at a neutral site, so it says at LSU, but I'm pretty sure it's at neutral venue in, or I say neutral venue, but I think it's actually in Louisiana, not necessarily at the Tigers' home stadium.
Oh, okay.
But for this one, it is just a case of Clemson have had a very good defense. They lost a number of great defenders to the draft last year in the NFL, so they weren't quite the same as what they were a year ago. But it is, do you bet against who has basically made a charge through college football this year in Joe Burrow, and which team is going to be able to back it up? It should be a very competitive game, so taking Clemson on the +5.5 is not out the realms of possibility, but I do think that the Tigers, when I say the Tigers, they're both the Tigers, LSU will run out on top. Which way, I'm not sure in terms of the spread. I'm tempted to take the +5.5, but I do think the Tigers will win in a close one.
You've ruined my pick there as well, because I was just going to say I think the Tigers will win here.
and you just get out of jail either way.
You can chalk me down as 1-0 for my college.
The other thing that you'll notice in the betting is the over-under is 69.5.
I was going to say that. That's huge.
But in college football, you see these high-scoring games. And between these two sides that have put up so many points, the over is not out the realms of possibility in this one, because both teams scoring 30 is not really uncommon in college football, because the defenses aren't as meticulous. They're not as great. Obviously, you get more errors with it being college kids.
Yeah.
So the over, I think, isn't out the realms possibly, because I think we could see a close shootout in this one.
The opposite, really, to college basketball, which tends to be painfully low scoring, I feel, compared to the NBA. Whenever I watch a college basketball game, I always feel like
you're watching 90s throwback. Of which the irony was, when we did the podcast last week, we talked about the Heat-Raptors game, which
was 84-76 or something like that.
I was right, the Heat were going to cover, but it was not the prettiest cover you're ever going to see. It was
been a long time since we've seen a team get 70-something points in an NBA game.
Well, the stat that... well, the
80-odd occasionally, threw out 70.
Zone defense of daring the Raptors shoot, and they went 6 of 42 from 3 in that game. So not great percentages. But yeah, that was not a pretty game, but the Heat got it done, so I was happy in the end.
Indeed. Good man. We shall talk again next week, of course, where we'll be looking ahead to the championship games, and we're getting ever closer. Thank you for that, Stephen. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk again.
Pleasure as always.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.